I'm going to begin in chapter 2, verse 14. What we have here is basically the first gospel message. God's Spirit has fallen on His people, and we have the first gospel proclamation coming from Peter. Chapter 2 of Acts, verse 14. Then Peter stood up with the 11, raised his voice, and addressed the crowd. Fellow Jews and all who live in Jerusalem, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say. These men are not drunk as you suppose. It's only 9 in the morning. No, this was spoken by the prophet Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and your daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they will prophesy. I will show wonders in the heaven above and signs on the earth below, blood and fire, billows of smoke. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and glorious day of the Lord, and everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Men of Israel, listen to this. Jesus of Nazareth, who was a man accredited by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did among you through him, as you yourselves know. This man was handed over to you by God's set purpose and foreknowledge, and you, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. David said about him, I saw the Lord always before me, because he is at my right hand. I will not be shaken. Therefore, my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also will live in hope, because you will not abandon me to the grave, nor will you let your Holy One see decay. You have made known to me the paths of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence. The word of the Lord this morning. Go ahead and have a seat. Let me start off this morning by making a very long-awaited declaration. Winter is finally over. In the words of Jesus, taken totally out of context, it's finished, finally. As always, the beautiful spring weather with the temperature between 65 and 70 degrees, which is my personal preference. 65 is a little bit too cool for Lori. She likes it getting closer to 80. But the weather that I like lasted about 3 or 4 days. And then, of course, as you know, we've got the 90-degree weather to deal with. My dreams of having a full month between turning off the heat and turning on the air conditioner is gone again. But despite my disappointment about the temperature changing, there is something that I'm very, very happy about. People are finally outdoors. Lori and I moved in towards the end of October, and it was around that time where weather started to change, things started to get cooler, and everybody went into hibernation mode. And so for most of the time that Lori and I have been living right in the parsonage, just on the other side of the block, our neighbors have also been gone. Actually, our next door neighbors were gone for the winter months. They left quite a while ago, so we hadn't even really seen them at all. But right now, it's a time when the neighbors are out, the neighbors are busy, and that means that we can actually have conversations with them. Over the course of those months, really the only neighbors that Lori and I have gotten to know, at least on a regular basis, has been Brian and Jerry, and Brian or Jerry's wife across the street, because they come to the prayer meeting that we have on Thursday nights. Right now, I'm trying to figure out what the neighborhood rules are. I'm not sure who is the head of the neighborhood watch committee, but I do already know that we have a neighborhood watch. Somebody who watches when I roll my trash and recycle bins up to the house on time, and somebody who watches when I don't. Sometimes I'm busy and I don't get it pulled up on the first day, but what the neighborhood watch is what I'll call it. The neighborhood watch, what they'll do is Tuesday morning is if I haven't rolled my things back up to the garage, they do it for me. So I don't know who it is. I have an idea already from the neighbors I've met. I think I know who's doing it. But the one thing I am going to do is make sure I get it done before Tuesday morning, so that way they aren't doing it. The way gossip tends to go is it gets around the block before it gets to you. So I don't want to have a reputation in the neighborhood of not being the person, of being the person who doesn't get his stuff up in time. So unofficially, I have one day to do it myself. On Friday night, I had the opportunity to talk to my next door neighbor, who just happens to be the neighborhood historian. I found out that this was the neighborhood historian from the person across the street from me who was the neighborhood talker, who talks about everybody on the block. And he informed me that the neighbor beside me was somebody that had been there for a very long time, so that if I had questions about the neighborhood and things that had changed and things like that, he's the person to go to. So I had the opportunity, Laura and I were out on our deck, and the neighbors were out on their deck, and so we were able to talk to them and found out that they were, in fact, they had been there since the early 60s. And so he was able to share just a little bit about the area. Every community has a story. This morning, we're starting a new kind of journey. In January, we actually started looking at the book of John, and so we did a journey through the book of John as we followed the steps of Jesus from the cradle to the cross, and not just there, but to the resurrection of Jesus and the pouring out of his Spirit. The pouring out of God's Spirit, which we celebrated last week, was the beginning of a new thing that God did as we go from following a person to following a people, a new community. The book of Acts gives us a historical transition from a person, Jesus, to his people, the body of Christ, from Christ to Christians. And so over the next few months, we're actually going to be spending our time looking at that transition, specifically looking at the community that is trying to figure out all sorts of things as it goes along. This shouldn't be the least bit surprising to church people living in this kind of a church climate that we live in. But when it comes to the early church, it's messy. It's Spirit-empowered and it's effective, but nonetheless, it's a mess when the church gets its start. Over the years, I've heard people say on numerous occasions that, and you've probably heard this as well, we need to be a first century church again. We need to get back to being like the early church. Here's what I want to say when I hear that. Did you read the whole book of Acts or just the beginning part of the book of Acts? It's really easy to read the first couple chapters and read about the Spirit and get excited about that sort of thing that's going on. But if you read through the whole book of Acts, you realize that there were a lot of conflicts and challenges that the church had to go through. It is a very good thing that those people want to have the fresh outpouring of the Spirit. But we do need to recognize the fact that the church had all kinds of challenges that we can learn from. The book of Acts gives us a look into that new community, and this morning I want to give just a few opening characteristics of that community as we start into this series over the next few months. This new community is a community that had a unique identity. At their core, communities have a common identity that unites them. Communities can gather together for a whole host of reasons. We're familiar with geographical communities, communities that are united by virtue of the fact that we simply live together. We live our lives in the same area, the same neighborhoods. There are all sorts of things that can reinforce a person's sense of community, from local sports teams to from a local high school to a professional sport team located in that town. All those things contribute to a sense of community. There are people who cheer for the Cubs or the White Sox or the Blackhawks or the Bulls or the Bears simply by virtue of the fact that I live in Chicago, that's the local team, that's the team I need to support. They've grown into a fan of being those teams because they've been surrounded by a whole lot of fans for those particular sports teams. It doesn't matter how awful the Bears were, are, or will be again next year, those fans are going to subject themselves to the same kind of torment because supporting the local team is what you do no matter what. Communities can be formed around other things as well, from hobbies and interests. There are all sorts of things that get people to gather together. Not all hobbies are created equal. The mafia is a community that gathers together around the kind of criminal activity that mafias tend to do. The kids that I work with at the hospital, they live in situations where they're dealing with street gangs and the drug culture that goes with it, and they're very much a part of a community. People that dress up in Civil War outfits and reenact famous battles, or people who dress up like sci-fi characters from Star Wars or Star Trek, those groups are also a part of a community. People that transform the shaved hair of animals into articles of clothing, or as my wife calls it, crocheting and knitting, those people are a part of a community. The truth is that I can't give Lori a hard time about her particular knitting, crocheting community because hers is actually a productive group of people. They make something. They have something when they're done meeting together. The same can't be said about the strategy board game group that I was a part of for numerous years down in Bourbonnais and Kankakee. We spent many years and all kinds of hours going through and strategizing for particular games, and nothing actually came out of it. All those hours, but not a single real-world problem was actually resolved. We didn't make a single stocking cap or pair of socks, so nothing ever good came from that community. The community that we're going to be talking about and discussing over the next few months had an extremely unique identity. The community that comes together in the book of Acts is not coming together because of their shared geography. They're not coming together because they had some sort of a shared interest that brought them together. Instead, they come together because of their shared encounter with Jesus. the one who walked among them, the one who died for them, and the one who was raised again. And then this is what we read in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, beginning in verse 3. For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Peter, and then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep. Then he appeared to James, then to all the apostles, and last of all, he appeared to me also as to one abnormally born. This new community, this collection of people that come together because they are witnesses of the resurrected Jesus, there were multitudes of people who were witnesses to the life of Jesus, and that community is coming together in the book of Acts, and it includes hundreds and hundreds of people who are witnesses to the resurrection of Jesus. People weren't sitting around trying to form a new club. They weren't trying to figure out a way to attract new people by posting a sign-up sheet and see how many people are interested in joining their particular club just to hang out. The resurrected Jesus appeared to hundreds of people, and those people could not help but get together and share their experience with others. There are all kinds of shared experiences that bring people together. Life is filled with shared experiences. For me, there were experiences like the Tiananmen Square, or the Challenger explosion, or the Berlin Wall, or the 9/11. The generation before me has shared experiences that I don't have, and the generation that comes after me will have experiences that I won't have either. Those shared generational experiences have a lifespan that fades over time. How long it takes to fade depends on the magnitude of the experience that people went through. Even though we live at a time when events can be shared with a worldwide audience, it actually doesn't take a whole long time for people to move on and forget about what's happened and move on to the next thing. The shared experience of this community in Acts, however, was an experience that has had worldwide implications for over 2,000 years. Their identity centered on the person of Jesus, and the ripples of their experiences are still being felt. This new community is a new community that also had a commission. Most communities don't have much of a purpose or a mission to them, at least not any kind of a mission that expands beyond the group itself. The strategy game group that I was a part of for years played all sorts of games involving world domination, but we had no real world plans that extended past the kitchen table. We had no interest in sharing our gaming experiences in the hopes that other gaming groups would get started because of our testimony. We didn't try to plant new groups. We had one goal: just have enough people show up on a particular Monday night or Thursday night so we could spend a couple hours peacefully stressing out over a game. That's the only thing we wanted. The new community in Acts is a community with a commission that is there from the very beginning. It's a commission that we read in Acts chapter 1. So if you still have Acts chapter 2 opened up, just flip back to Acts chapter 1. I'm just going to read one quick verse in there. Acts chapter 1, verse 8. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. That new community had a calling. The witnesses that were a part of that community were given the responsibility to go out and spread the gospel message. The gospel message that had everything to do with what they had seen and what they had heard, and it was intended for a larger audience than just those in Jerusalem. This morning, as we're gathered together in this place at this time in Crestwood in 2018, we are witnesses to the fact that in many ways, they fulfilled the commission they were given. Is there any place in this world more on the other end of the earth than Crestwood from Jerusalem? Actually, last night I had Lori look on the little globe we have at home. I was over here at the church. I'm like, hey, hon, I want you to tell me what's exactly on the opposite side, the other end of the earth from Jerusalem. We're close to it. We're actually, the Pacific Ocean is where the other side of the earth is. But I can tell you this morning that I have friends that I know that are in Hawaii, and they know about Jesus, and Jesus is being preached on the other end of the earth from Jerusalem this morning. The intent of the commission given to this new community in Acts is that the gospel message would reach people and not places. And since the intent and goal of the Christ-centered community is people and not just places, there's still a lot of work to do. When it comes to the calling of the church and other churches in the community, our commission could be reworded in this way. We are to be his witnesses in Crestwood and in all Chicagoland and Wisconsin and to the end of the earth. If you're a Bears fan, it's something deep inside you went, ew, when I said Wisconsin. That's an extremely appropriate response. And the reality is that when Jesus said to his very Jewish disciples that their commission was going to take them to Samaria, chances are that deep inside them, they had that same kind of a ooh response. They didn't want to go to Samaria. Those were people they didn't necessarily want to associate with. The commission given to them and the commission that remains for us today is a commission that will take us places we may not prefer. Another characteristic of this new community is that it's a new community with old roots. While the community that is gathering together in the book of Acts is in many ways a new community that is doing some very new things because of the Spirit poured out upon them, the founding members of this community are bringing with them a very long history of their people, a history full of traditions that inform their way of life and how they did things. And now they find themselves in a situation where they are the bride of Christ. If any of you have ever been through an extensive spring cleaning process, you know how grueling that process can be, trying to decide what you need to get rid of, what you need to keep. What can make that process even more grueling is if you have to do it as a part of a team process, a husband and wife, where one person is valuable to the husband, but it's not valuable to the wife, and vice versa. What's valuable to one person is not usually valuable to everyone else. The new community in Acts is a community with a commission that is there at the startup. It is not valuable to the other. If both parties are stubborn enough, you can end up in a situation where nothing is discarded. I want to keep my stuff, she wants to keep her stuff, and so we end up keeping everything. This community in Acts is a community that has a lot of baggage to unpack as they start doing their life together as the bride of Christ. What is it that they're going to keep from their former life and their former community, and what are they going to get rid of? As we go through this series, one of the things that we'll be seeing time and time again is the unpacking of Jewish teachings and customs and attempts to view them in the light of Christ with the help of the Spirit. They need the help of the Spirit to make those tough decisions about what's important and what's not. Along with that, there's a question of who to let into the community and who to keep out. Who's allowed to be a part of this new community that's getting formed? The previous community had very clear lines concerning membership. You had Jews on the one side and Gentiles on the other, and that was it. Gentiles didn't have the law, and so they didn't have the kinds of traditions and the kinds of restrictions that informed the life of Jewish people. Can Gentiles be a part of this new community? And if so, what should the entry fee be? And what is the standard for behavior once they're in? Years ago, when I was at Olivet, I was an RA for one of the dorms, Hills Hall. I actually lived in that dorm for 3 full school years and a couple summers, so I spent a good part of my time in that single building. The thing that I loved about being an RA, the thing that actually had me interested in becoming an RA, was the opportunity to build relationships with people in the dorm. The financial package that they had for that position was also very appealing, but the one thing I was interested in was I was a ministry student. I thought that that would be a great way to minister to the guys that were a part of the dorm that I was living in. The thing that I loved about it was the relationships, but the thing that I hated about it, that role, was writing up people for violations. Had it been up to me, the kinds of rules that would have been in place would have been very different than the ones that Olivet had. But last I checked, Olivet still doesn't let 19 and 20-year-olds decide the behavioral rules for the school. When I was attending there were specific rules about clothes, hair length, tattoos, piercings, and a whole host of external regulations. Regulations that focused on what does a member of the Olivet community, what ought they look like, and how ought they behave. Good luck getting hundreds of college kids coming from all sorts of different contexts. Good luck getting them to agree on, much less abide by, the rules that Olivet had in place. As for me, how was I as an RA? I was not the enforcer type. I didn't follow the letter of the law. I aimed for the spirit of the law in most things. And looking back, I don't actually feel guilty about some of the things that I let slide by, because a lot of the rules that I let people get around are actually a lot of rules they don't even have anymore. So I figure, okay, well, it was going to change eventually. I was the one kind of spearheading the way for them to make the change. When it comes to this new community coming together in Acts, they have to go through that process of what to do with the rules, and they have grown up, they are trying to figure out what to do with the rules that they grew up with and figure out what rules actually need to change. And the last characteristic of this new community is the most reassuring characteristic. It's a new community with challenges. As I mentioned earlier, there are some who look upon the early church with rose-colored glasses, but the reality is the church had to face all kinds of obstacles. The characteristics of that community that we just went through were in many ways seeds that were sown that led to possible conflicts down the road. Sorting out the identity of the community and the commission of the community while also addressing all of the old roots of the community meant that the leaders of the church were busy putting out fires. No sooner would they deal with one conflict and get that resolved than another conflict came up somewhere else and they had to deal with that. Here's one of my favorite passages in Acts, is in Acts chapter 2 at the very end. Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as they had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. What's significant about that passage is the fact that it's a situation that takes place in Jerusalem. They haven't had to deal with any real resistance yet. They haven't had to deal with the issue of outsiders wanting to become insiders. It's a situation that takes place before, really, they've done anything. God's Spirit has shown up, but at this point, the church hasn't gone anywhere or done anything. What is reassuring about those challenges is the fact that the author of Acts doesn't hide them. It'd be nice if Acts just had those first couple chapters, but Acts is 28 chapters long, and the author of Acts doesn't hide those challenges from the people and the situations the people went through. And so we get to, hopefully, learn from the experiences as we work our way through this book. Every church has its challenges, and it has been that way from the beginning. Those challenges may vary greatly from one church to the next, but the way in which church communities are to go about resolving them doesn't vary greatly. We are to resolve them in ways that are reflective of Christ in us and Christ through us. Christ shapes the kind of relationships that we're supposed to have with one another as community insiders, as found sheep. And Christ shapes the kinds of relationships that this community is supposed to have with a world full of outsiders, the lost sheep. This morning we're going to be closing with the song, Yes, Lord, Yes. Over the next few months, we're going to be looking and talking about the community accounts in Acts. But what needs to follow from those discussions is the question about what does God desire to do here? To be honest, God's desire doesn't matter a whole lot if I'm not first willing to say yes to it. Knowing God's will, knowing God's desire is still a long ways away from actually doing it. And so, as we set out on this journey through Acts, let's start off with the affirmation that our chief desire is to line up with God's desire. We have numerous chapters to go through to deal with the challenges that they face and talk about the kinds of challenges we face. But for right now, let's prepare our hearts for that work by saying, yes, Lord, yes. Go ahead and stand as we sing this morning.